You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Joey's season of The Bachelor and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to podcast number 383. I'm your host, Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in. And yes, we're doing this a day early because I'm heading off to Vegas today, and I just didn't want to have to add this on my laptop computer because things go a little bit slower when I'm on the road. It takes me a little bit longer to upload everything, so I figured I'd get this out of the way early. And hey, who doesn't want to hear Dave Neal a day early? I certainly do. So, good conversation with Dave that we will get to momentarily. So, yeah, I decided to have Dave on because he's got an event coming up next Thursday. If you're in the Phoenix area, you can check it out. It is at a comedy club in Phoenix, the Desert Lodge Inn. He has the exact link where you can get tickets next Thursday in the Phoenix area. However, what it's going to be is, yes, it is Dave's stand-up, but he's also doing a Q&A live with Clayton. So everything is on his page. It's at dneals, N-E-A-L-Z, on Instagram. It's in his bio. You can click on that. If you're in the Phoenix area, check it out. Or if you want to drive to it next Thursday, you can. It's on March 28th. But I wanted to have Dave on to talk about that. We talk Bachelorette. Now, we recorded this on Monday. I'm recording this open on Tuesday night. As of right now, I do not know who the Bachelorette is. I give... you know, my thoughts on it, you pretty much know where I stand as a television side of it. I can see, I don't think, like I said, I don't think you can go wrong with either Daisy or Maria. They are the two most polarizing women this season. So it doesn't matter to me who they pick. Dave thinks they should go with Maria, and he gives his reasons why. Can't say I disagree with it. But if they did go with Daisy, I wouldn't be mad at that either. I just, whether it's Maria or Daisy, I think it's going to be two different seasons, for sure. Two different women. Two different styles, I think. I think Daisy is the safe choice. Kind of maybe going the Dez route with someone like Daisy. Whereas I think Maria would produce... she'd kind of be like Caitlyn 2.0, maybe even Hannah B. 2.0. So I don't think you can go wrong with either. I know everyone's got opinions. Look, if they choose Daisy, Maria fans are going to absolutely lose their shit, just like they have online, because Joey gave Rachel a rose over Maria. If they choose Maria, Daisy fans are going to be upset. Look, this happens every season. Actually, I think it didn't happen last season because I think most people wanted Joey. I think Xavier had pretty much blown any chance he had of getting the Bachelor gig when he told Charity what he did during the overnight dates. And then Aaron B. had already gone down to Paradise, so it wasn't going to be him. I think everyone was pretty fine with Joey as the Bachelor, and he did well for himself this season. But this season, there's absolutely not a consensus. We have to pick this woman. I mean, you've got people championing for Leslie. Leslie's probably going to be your Golden Bachelorette. No, we got people championing for Lexi. We've got people championing for Jen. We got people championing for Rachel. But I think this is, as I've been told for 2 weeks now, this is between Maria and Daisy. And I can say, look, they've already chosen their Bachelorette. I know this for a fact. Problem is, I don't know who it is. And you could be like, how do you know that they chose them, but you don't know who it is? Well, I can't really reveal that without revealing a source. So that's the best I can give you. But they have already chosen it. So nothing that anybody says online right now or any groundswell support for someone over someone else is going to do anything. They've already chosen their woman, and it's just a matter of, is it Daisy or is it Maria? And you'll hear Dave and I talk about it. We'll kind of break it down. We also spend some time. He updates you on what's going on with the Clayton and Laura Owen situation. Because for those, you know, that don't follow Dave every day, and I haven't talked about it in probably a week and a half or 2 weeks, just because they're in the discovery phase right now. Clayton's lawyers, they were granted her medical records, and now they are putting together a case because this is going to trial on June 10th in Arizona, which I plan to be at, assuming this isn't settled or whatnot. So this is a case that is going to trial on June 10th. And right now, Clayton's lawyers basically have, 2 months to put everything together and get their case together. And that trial is to find out who's going to have to pay the bills. I don't think it looks good for Laura Owens right now because she's getting absolutely destroyed in the court of law, as she should, because she has admitted things. that she probably shouldn't have admitted if she wants to win this case, but it's better to do that than lie under oath. But Dave and I talk about it. Dave knows a little bit more of the intricate details, so we go over that. I want to update everybody, since I haven't spoken about it in a while, on what's going on with that situation. And then we've got, we also talk about stand-up comedy, because you know I love stand-up comedy. I like the inner workings of it. I asked Dave about his career, what he wants to do, what he wants to get out of it. Is he interested in ever having a Netflix special? How long could he do right now if he had to do a set? Could he go an hour? Does he have an hour material? Just so much stuff to talk about in regards to it, and we kind of combine that with this show next Thursday in Phoenix. Like I said, go to his page. You can click on the link, and it'll bring you right to where you can purchase tickets. He is the headliner that night, but he is going to do a set, probably, he said, 20, 25, maybe even 30 minutes, depending on how it's going. And then he's going to do a live Q&A with Clayton on stage. So that'll be really cool for people that are interested in that sort of thing, because I got to believe some people want to see Clayton up close and personal being interviewed by Dave Neal. Now, it's not going to be a full grill session on, hey, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to talk about Laura Owens. Like, it's going to be more... They can't focus on that because they're still in the middle of a lawsuit, or, you know, Clayton's in the middle of a lawsuit and going to trial, but they will bring it up. It's just, it's not going to be focused all on that. So don't think that's the case. This podcast brought to you by Earth Echo Foods and their feel-good superfood product called Cacao Bliss. You will fall in love with a truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate. As a listener to this podcast, you can receive an additional 15% off exclusive offer when you visit shop.earthechofoods.com/realitysteve and use the discount code realitysteve. It is an additional 15% off when you visit shop.earthechofoods.com/realitysteve and use the discount code realitysteve. This podcast is also brought to you by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile has wireless plans starting at $15 a month. That's unlimited talk and text plus data for $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data, like I said, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. There's 3, 6, and 12-month plans. Say goodbye to your monthly phone bill. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/realitysteve. That is mintmobile.com/realitysteve. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/realitysteve. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. All right, let's get going. Podcast number 383. Okay, let's bring him in. You know him as a multi-time guest on this show. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a YouTube recapper of The Bachelor. He's also got a podcast, The Bachelor Rush Hour. It is Dave Neal. Dave, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, I kind of feel like we should get some sort of medallion every time we do your show.
I know. I mean, you clearly are the leader in the clubhouse and probably will be until the end of time for most times appearing on the podcast. But, you know, I introduced you with all of that, but what I left out was I should have now introduced you as Dirty Salesman Dave Neal. What? Okay, so I didn't watch the video. I just went on your page to see, like, hey, did Dave talk about something that I didn't need to bring up? I didn't watch the video. So I want you to tell everybody exactly why a fan reached out to you and thinks you're a dirty salesman. But tell us the story.
Well, I guess they thought I was doing charity work on the podcast, but you know how it is. Like, if you want, there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? So if people want to watch my YouTube videos, they either got to sit through a few ads or pay for the YouTube premium. And I guess this person didn't like that I was making money and thought that because I called myself a barrel scraper that I was like living below the poverty line or something.
And that's, people took the time out of their day to tell you that. Like, I've never really understood it, but we know that it happens. I know there were people that were so bothered by the fact that, you bought a Tesla and then you and Tasha had gone on vacation. Like, they really got bothered by the fact that your job pays you money to which you then used to spend on yourself. I don't really understand what the outrage is here by people.
Well, that's the dilemma, right? Like, you have to know, like, first of all, what's your audience coming for? So I always say sometimes you got to crack an egg to make an omelet. So when I expose some of these buffoons, will I lose an audience member for life? Yes. Will I possibly gain the love and respect of 8 more people? Maybe. So, but yeah, when we went to the Maldives, you know, people were like, oh, must have been nice. To hell it was. Yeah, it really was. I spent 10 years working barely minimum wage. I can finally afford to take my wife to a nice fancy place. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like this is something that anybody should get upset. I mean, are people upset that, you know, obviously it's on a completely different scale, but, you know, you watch a movie, you watch a TV show of your favorite people that are rich, and they probably post on their Instagram stories of where they are. Are fans basically shit-talking them because it's like, ugh, I watch your stuff, and now you're out, you know, gallivanting around in Bora Bora. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. What is it?
The reason why I share whatever like abundance I can is because for every one of those people who literally he said they were heartbroken, for every single one of those people, a lot of people find it inspiring. I mean, that's why I worked so hard, because I was inspired when I saw how much other YouTubers were making, and I haven't been exactly hiding how much I make. Anyone on my Patreon sees all my stats. It's like, look, I'm not just, you know, waking up and, you know, rolling out of bed and firing off a tweet that's paying me six figures. You know, get mad at some of these people that get an audience and don't do anything with it. Like you and I and us like indie guys, we have everything that we have because we built an audience that wants to show up. So I'm still giving them what they want, which is me roasting people that are heartbroken. Good God, get out of here.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, for what we do versus, you know, even just taking people from this franchise, you know, there are a lot of people that get off the show and they're allowed to pitch whatever products they want to do. You know, you strike while the iron is hot on this show. I get it. But I think what we do is a little more valuable than somebody who, you know, looks into the camera and puts makeup on their face and says, get ready with me and here's what I'm going to tell you. You know, it's just, I think we provide something a little bit more than that, but to each their own. I don't fault anybody for doing get ready with me videos. I think they're kind of comical to me.
Oh, they're so funny.
I know that it's a thing now. I know that's a big thing for women to watch other women get ready and then either share with them exactly how they're getting ready or just what's the girl that made a living at Alex Earl, this TikTok woman that went online and just basically was doing get ready with me videos, but basically just recapping her day. And then the next get ready with me video was what happened to her the night before when she went out. Like,
well, okay, I'll definitely comment on get ready with me video, but this will be the last moment where we blow each other, because I don't want to knock either one of us up here. But yeah,
that can end in pregnancy if you didn't know that.
Well, it could, but I have, you know, I'll call the FBI on you. Don't worry. Yeah. Steve knocked me up. But that's one way to get a good review for the podcast. Organic growth is what they call that. Yeah. But I mean, I'm like, look, you know, if you were on the show and everyone wants to get that first interview, once you've been on the show, like a Victoria Fuller, like when she came off of Paradise, she would have, you know, that would have been such great tea. But she isn't necessarily the content. The content is the drama. With you and I, the content is the reaction and the sort of commentary of the drama. So it's got a longer shelf life because we don't die when that story dies. We get to keep on talking about things. That's why I wouldn't change my position for anybody's. And when you take like things like the Get Ready With Me videos, it's obvious why they work. Humans like to see like a beginning, a middle, and an end. We love to hear story times and find out how something ends. So a Get Ready With Me video is essentially a beginning and an end, because you get to see the before and the after, just like every show that exists out there. Like, home makeover shows. It's always the before and the after. We just love to see a finished product. But then they're also telling a story. So like they're just hitting you with all of these different reasons to stick around. And then the algorithms promote it because they have high watch time. But all we're doing is just giving our thoughts and opinions, and who would have thought it would piss people off? You know, it's so strange.
Yeah, it is. You know, and sometimes I get it with my podcast, my daily podcast. I will get an email or I'll get an Instagram message from somebody that listened to it during the day and immediately says, well, that didn't, there was no tea in it. It's like, I'm not going to have tea every day. There's not 365 days a year in Bachelor Nation. Like, if if that's all you're listening for, and just, I don't care what you have to say about anything other than spoilers, I would just tell those people, like, look, just then go listen somewhere else, because I think what I provide, if I'm not giving out spoilers, I think I have a pretty good pulse on this franchise. I've been doing it over 20 years now. I think I offer some pretty good insights, some pretty good takes, and it's just like, ugh. What had no tea in it. You didn't know anything about what happened. Like, Women Tell All, I have not gotten a lot of information about the Women Tell All. And by the way, we're recording this on Monday night. It's running either Wednesday or Thursday. I haven't decided yet. But so when I talk about Women Tell All, just know we're recording this before the Women Tell All takes place on Monday night. And yeah, it's just a weird reaction from people that they just want. And look, I'm somebody that literally gives information for free. Like, if I had a Patreon page and I was charging people, and the whole point of the Patreon was you were going to get exclusive stuff, and I wasn't delivering that on a Patreon, totally would understand the criticism. But I offer a free service to anybody, and you can either choose to read it, to listen to it, or not. But to bitch about something that's given to you for free, it's kind of mind-boggling when I think about it. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, and I was getting that in my Patreon, where, like, people, I mean, I go live every day, so people literally get to see when breaking news stories come in. I give it to them hot off the press. But people were starting to get mad at me when I had to delay several stories. And as you know, sometimes a source is, like, so obvious or so white hot, you almost, like, can't report it right away.
Yeah.
It's almost like you knew your source just broke into a place. You need to give them a little bit of a chance to get away before you report on it, because, you know, you just gotta, like, you know, sometimes you just have to, like, let that marinate. And people, you know, very, very few, but some people just don't understand that. They just want it right away. And it's like, well, if I gave you this info right away, I might lose the source, and then I don't get the info tomorrow. So you have to, like, people don't always understand. It's like, we know what we're doing. It's going to take a minute. Now, in your case, you've now got to compete with people trying to spoil things with you. So that's a whole nother level of urgency. Like, how do you feel when you think you're the only one who has a source? And, like, are you always, like, you know, ready to shoot it out before someone like Zach or someone else posts it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really too worried about the TikTok gossip monger. I don't worry about him. He's not a spoiler person. He just repeats what I say and doesn't give me credit. So that's his deal. That's what he wants to do. but I just, for me, especially this season, like, this season was, you know, so bizarre, because 2 weeks after this episode, after filming ended back in November, I gave everybody, you know, every rose, every date, every elimination, all the way up to the final one. And the only thing I had wrong this season, outside of, I think, of one group date rose, and I had one girl mixed up going home, like, rose ceremony 3 versus 4. Like, okay, if you're going to hold me against that 10 years from now, then that's a you problem, not a me problem. But I had everything laid out 2 weeks after filming ended in November, except I had the 1 and 2 obviously mixed up between, you know, I thought Daisy won, and it's Kelsey. So that was, to have that wrong for 3 months was kind of, I mean, obviously I didn't want to be wrong, but the thing is to, you know, to get it corrected. But it then turns into, it's almost a lose-lose situation for me, because if I would have gotten Kelsey right in November but had nothing else about this season, I would have gotten comments about, well, you didn't know anything about this season. All you knew was the winner. And then if I would have given them everything right like I did except for the winner, it's like, oh, but you didn't even know the winner. We don't care about who goes home in episode 3. So it's almost like you can't win unless you get the, you know, until, you know, we've talked about,
like,
throwing a perfect game. I threw 8 2/3, and I gave up a broken bat single in the bottom of the 9th is what happened.
I like analogy. I was going to go with, like, Brady in the Super Bowl when he throws for 500 yards and still loses.
He loses, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you made it to the Super Bowl. Everyone else can shut up, and, you know, you're never going to get – I mean, have you had any seasons – I guess it's kind of hard to measure, but have you had any seasons where you just got, like, almost every episode – or every meaningful thing, right? Probably, right?
Yeah, I would think most that I had the ending right. I mean, there were some. God, I mean, there's been so many. What's crazy was I was doing an interview recently, I think, with Monsters and Critics, and we're just kind of going over my career. And first off, I can't believe I've been doing spoiling since 2009. Like, the Jason Mesnick spoiler was the first one I ever got. That was January of 2009, his season aired. Like, 15 years of spoiling, and I really haven't had, you know, much of competition out there. I get, you know, the Instagram accounts come along every once in a while and whatnot, and, you know, can post something here and there. But I'm talking about consistently season in, season out. People know where to go to get their spoilers. And, you know, there are times, like you said earlier, where, yeah, I have gotten something, but I'm told, please don't release this right now. It could trace back to this particular thing. And I'm just like, okay. And yeah, I've definitely had to hold on to things. I don't think anything this season so much, but in the past, absolutely have had to hold on to certain things longer than I would like to, because you just never know. I mean, I don't think most people are putting out spoilers, but you just never know. I mean, I could get something tomorrow. Like, the big thing going on now as we record this on Monday is, you know, I think this week I'm probably going to find out at some point who the Bachelorette is. Now, we're recording on Monday. By the time this airs, I might have already spoiled it on podcast or social media or whatever. So I got to keep that in mind as well. So if you're listening to this, it might be outdated in terms of Bachelorette, because I do think they've chosen their Bachelorette. I just don't know who it is yet, but I think it's fairly certain to say, well, it's between Maria and Daisy.
You're a betting man. Who would you bet on the two?
Gosh, I was looking at it from a television perspective, from a TV production perspective, and to me, Daisy would make the most sense because she checks off the boxes of dumped at the end, you know, has the backstory, and then obviously the underdog story that she's had all season has resonated with the audience. But I don't think you can go wrong with either one. Now, the only thing about Maria that I was like, okay, is what is her story? Like, they want stories. We know what Daisy's story is. And outside of Maria being dumped, I guess the bullying by the other girls, if that's what you want to call bullying, I guess that she's got a little bit of an underdog story. But, you know, for me, I guess in recent days, like, I don't care. I say this all the time. I don't care who they choose. My job is still the same next season, whether it's Daisy or Maria. Get the spoilers. So it doesn't matter to me who they choose. So for me, just in recent days, Maria's social media in the last week or so seems a little thirsty, but maybe she's just trying. I don't know. I didn't notice as many posing pictures and having to show us her backside every time she takes a picture. And that seems to have taken over her Instagram stories recently. And I'm just like, okay, I get it. You know, I don't know. But either way, if she gets it, great. If Daisy gets it, great. I don't really care who gets it.
Well, you know, you see, this is the old, you're old school. Showing your backside today is like waving to somebody. Yeah. So that's not,
yeah,
I'm, she's almost, just like,
yeah.
Let me tell you something. I do care who the next Bachelorette is. I'm highly rooting for Maria to be Bachelorette.
For what reason?
And, well, I'll say this. So the only reason I think Golden Bachelor was so successful is because of the word of mouth. And I can't imagine a season where Daisy produces any sort of word or mouth moments. I mean, I mean this with respect to Daisy. It's like, she's going to choose a guy who's kind of like a Ken to her Barbie, and they'll be fine, and it'll be nice for the people that are watching. But the loyal audience is going to watch either way. What's Maria going to do? Whenever you say like somebody's trouble, yeah, Maria's trouble in the sense that I see men having a bar fight over Maria. I don't see that with Daisy. Hmm. And I think the bar fight is what the show needs on The Bachelorette. They need these guys to go Looney Tune over someone. And I just see her conjuring that up more than Daisy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I didn't really think of it that way. My only thing, I guess, with Daisy would have been the talk surrounding her would be the representation she would be giving to the deaf and hard of hearing community, to where,
yeah, no, I totally get that, but wouldn't, yeah, they have already milked that muscle for The Bachelor? Like they already got whatever press they're going to get for that, is my thought.
I guess just making her the lead, as giving somebody, yeah, in the first time in 49 seasons, we have a lead who has, yeah, I don't know if the word is disability is the right word, but they've never done that. They've never had a lead that had some sort of quote unquote disability, and it might check a box for them. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's,
and again, not to sound like this is going to sound so crass, but it's like not, and it's like, I'm not trying to have a disability like Olympics here, but is it enough for an audience to care? If she's blind, audiences might be like, well, let's see what the blind bachelorette does. Maybe she'll choose the redhead for the first time. God bless the redhead, but he's never, he's a night one guy. Yeah. So you're just like, I don't think it moves the needle enough for people, but you're right that it would check a box off, but it's not in the end, the census that they're looking for. It's who's going to talk, who's going to get content made. And I just see these dudes, like if I were single and I was going out with my buddies, someone like Maria is going to be the type where, like, if my buddy gets her number, everyone's going to be high-fiving and this and that. She just kind of has that sex appeal. And I think most people online get it. Some people go, I don't really understand, but I think she's like super sexy. I think a lot of women see her as sexy. And she's like kind of like a women's woman, and the guys are into her. So I don't see how it's anyone but her. But like you said, if the show just wants to hit a guaranteed double and get on base, Daisy will definitely do that.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I've looked at it through a producer perspective. But yes, I would think, because these two women couldn't be any more different based on what we've seen on TV. You know, I mean, Daisy presents a certain type of bachelorette that I think Maria presents a different type of bachelorette. Like you said, it's more of the, because remember last episode we had Sandra having to go to Daisy and telling her basically, you need to sex it up a little bit, you know, be a little more assertive, where I think you wouldn't have to ever tell Maria that, you know.
Maria tried to play the bachelorette card a few times where she's like, I'm not kissing you. And then she does. Like, she realized she didn't have the power. But if you give her the power as the bachelorette, I think she has the guys eating out of her hand.
Yeah, I really do think. I mean, it's between them. And like I said, I don't think you can go wrong with either one. I think you're just getting two different seasons. Like you said, I think you're looking at almost a safe pick in Daisy, where she could certainly be the lead of your show. But Maria could also be the lead of your show, and I think that there is a story there for both. So we should be finding out soon enough. And like I said, by the time people hear this, it might have already been spoiled, and I might have already gotten it. So just know we're recording this on Monday.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, if Paradise were happening this summer, if it does happen, get Maria down to Paradise. But assuming it doesn't happen, you're gonna hold her for another year. I mean, she's F Girl Island or whatever the hell they want to call it, Lovers and Liars, whatever. Yeah. She's gone. She's going to another reality show if you don't take her.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that, but she's absolutely going to be in this reality TV vortex where people kind of jump from show to show. Not that she could go on, you know, they would never put her on Love is Blind or anything like that, because those are too big of shows. It's those spinoff shows where, you know, Traitors, The Challenge, those type of shows, to where, you know, Perfect Match 2, where you get somebody from another show and bring them on, as opposed to the main shows being Love is Blind, Love Island, Bachelor, Bachelorette. You don't see the crossover there. You more see the crossover on the spinoff shows.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about this. One of the reasons I want to have you on is to promote next Thursday night, March 28th, in Phoenix, Arizona. Tell everybody what you're going to be doing and how they can go about getting tickets to this thing.
Well, I've got a live stand-up show, so just a standard stand-up show, but it's going to be bachelor-themed in the sense that it'll be like a bachelor meetup after the show, and we've got Clayton Eckerd doing a live Q&A with me. And how about this? I've got I found out Cassidy Timbrook's parents are going to be there, so no one tell Clayton, but my plan is to really put him on the spot and get him to – you know, get them to put him on the hot seat a little bit.
Cassidy was a podcast guest a couple months ago, and she's had quite of a journey, quite of an experience since her time on the show, because she basically was a different person back then because she was a functioning alcoholic when she was on Clayton's season. And now I believe she's, I want to say, 6 months sober now, and she's posting stuff, and she just... Even when I had her on the podcast, I could just tell she was different. And
she's so different. And if anyone's struggling and thinks that they are partying a little too hard, listen to Cassidy, because she's turned her life around, it seems.
Oh, for sure. And things are great with her. So how can people go about getting tickets to this thing?
I have the ticket link on my Instagram, so you can just go to my bio. But you can also just, desertridgeimprov.com. It's about half sold right now, which is really good for like pre-sales. And it's the improv is like kind of like the best comedy venue across the country. And they, so they have like really good food, good drinks. It's just going to be a fun event. We'll have a couple of my comedy friends will be there with me. So, yeah, but my website, if you go to my Instagram, that's probably the best way to get tickets.
And you're headlining?
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be, I think we have a host and two comics before me, then I'll do my time. And then maybe I'll do a little bit of a Q&A and then I'll bring Clayton up and we'll probably do like 15 or 20 minutes. You know, obviously we can't, I'm not imagining we'll talk too much about what's going on with him right now, but maybe, I mean, we'll have, whatever he wants to talk about, you know, but I always feel that pressure because like it's a stand-up show. So you're like, you're trying to make things fun, but it's going to, you know, it's like, it's been a tough year for him. So hopefully he can have a laugh.
Well, what is the, when you do it, when you do this gig, what's your set? How long is your set on something like this? 30 minutes?
Yeah, about 30 minutes. I guess it kind of like goes and depends on the time and also feeling the room. Like if I'm at 25 minutes and I'm just like feeling like I had a good set, we'll call it there. If I go longer, we'll do that too. It's, there's no second show, so it's kind of like whatever. They're always, you know, they're always just happy to sell drinks at the club. So it's just, you know, it's like dinner theater. They're just happy to sell their drinks and we're there to have a good time. And then afterwards, there'll be like a meet and greet. And there's like a really nice bar right next to it. So it's all walking distance. It's all like in the same complex. So it's kind of in like northern Phoenix. But yeah, there's a lot of bachelor folks are going. So people are going to be making some friends and people flying in for this because it's a cool, you know, it's good to get out of the cold for those that are in a long winter still.
Are Courtney and Alberto going?
Yeah, they'll be there. Awesome. I think there's going to be a lot of lawyers there. I got the whole legal team showing up, which is nice in case anyone calls the cops on me.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be a good time.
Woodnick and the crew are all going?
I think so. I mean, yeah. It'll be hilarious. I'm imagining. And I got to tell the security there, like, look out for Jane Doe. Not that I think she'll show up, but, you know, now that I'm in her home field, if she had a problem trying to sue me last time she tried to sue me because I was in California. And she's kind of like, you know, Arizona's her home field advantage. So hopefully she leaves me alone. It's not going to work out well for her, but I still have to kind of be ready for that.
You know, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I know you have, obviously, the work on, you know, your YouTube channel and your Patreon that you do. I mean, obviously, as a stand-up comedian, the ultimate goal, I guess, is to get a Netflix special. I don't know if that's your goal, but have you ever thought about, because I see it happening a lot right now where comedians are producing their own stand-up specials and just releasing them on YouTube. Do you want to go that route at one point and do a 50 to 60 minute set and produce your own stand-up special or no?
I would do it for none of the right reasons. Like I would do it so that my kid could have it when I'm dead someday. You know, like I think the only reason comedians do that is because they need to sell, they need to make money. And luckily because my business model is like making money on YouTube, I don't like take Jay Leno, for example. He's never done a special because he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to sell the stupid thing after his show. So it's kind of a product of necessity. Would I do it? Well, like my show, the one on March 28th, I'm going to hire a film guy to do a two camera shoot. Mm-hmm. I'm probably just going to give that away to my Patreon, you know, because they pay $5 a month. Like here, have it, you know, here's the Q&A if you want it. But no, I mean, Netflix, I wouldn't say that's the common goal. I think if you asked every comedian, the average comic would just say that they want to be able to do stand up. That's like saying if you, would you rather get to have sex every week or would you rather film yourself having the best sex ever? You would probably say I'd rather have sex every week. Well, like performing stand-up is a great emotional high. It's a great way to connect with people and all of that. So the actual like final product of showing someone your stand-up set, you're just inviting people that hate you to like comment on it. So not exactly a goal, but I wouldn't fear away from it. But where I am in my career about 12 years in is I just need to do more live stand-up shows. And I've kind of been slow out of the gate from the pandemic because, you know, you need to sell at least 50 to 100 tickets in a market to make it worth going there. But now I think I'm going to, you know, I'm going to try to get out maybe once a month to different live shows across the country. And then, you know, probably do a lot more driving distance stuff once we have the baby. That way, like the wife can come and everything. But But you know what's funny? I'm seeing all this shit that Blake Horseman gets for DJing. Are these idiots online aware at how much money Blake Horseman's getting paid to DJ? How dumb are people for complaining that he's DJing while his wife's pregnant? Hello, he's making a goddamn fortune right now. You know,
he's doing really well for himself.
That's not going to last forever. You know, DJing is like a really short shelf life because you got to be cool and like get the money, man. You know, like just like it's crazy. People are like, oh, he should be with his kid and this and that. I'm like, you know who has it the worst is like your blue collar plumber who's got to work 9 hours breaking his back and then he comes home and he's exhausted and can't play with his kid. You know, like if Blake's got to go fly to Iowa and spend two nights out of the month away from the family, like go be it, get your money.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how. I mean, he's not the biggest name in DJing, of course. He's not headlining in Las Vegas and making $5 million a weekend or whatever to appear, but he's doing really, really well for himself. And, you know, I always respect anybody from this franchise that goes on to have a career that has nothing to do with the franchise. And Blake is now one of them. He doesn't do anything. You know, he used to have a podcast in regards to the show, and he basically just stopped that for reasons that, you know, might have had to have been forced to stop it, but whatever the case may be, he is making his money and making really good money, not having anything to do with why people know Blake Horseman in the first place. And that, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, put it like this. So like, if I do a show and sell a $20 ticket, I'm usually going to get 80% of the door. So I'll make $16 per person. Imagine if Blake Horseman's going to do a music festival, imagine how much each audience member is spending on booze that day. Are you kidding me? Yeah. The average person's probably spending $60. So even if he's only getting half of that, he's making a fortune wherever he can go perform. Because, I mean, he's a good example of like DJs, no offense to him, because I'm sure he's good, but he's only been doing it since the pandemic. But my point being, it's like if people will come to see him throw a party and press the play button on his playlist, then bars and clubs are going to throw him, yeah, here's $20,000. Come, we know we're going to make $35,000 in drink sales. So like, it's all yours. So yeah, I mean, but it just goes to show how low the bar is creatively when you're actually selling tickets. Like for me, I mean, if I sell my break even to fly to Phoenix and put myself up in a hotel and pay my other comedians is probably selling only 50 tickets. Everything on top of that is just like profit. But that's kind of the risk you have to take, because it's one thing to say you're going to sell 50 tickets. It's another thing to actually make that a reality, because, you know, people got to get sitters and you got to find a fan base. So you slowly build it over time. But like, yeah, to go back to the comedians, I think most comics are just happy as a clam to just work in comedy. And like, I mean, take Dax Shepard, right? He was a actor and he's like, I don't care about acting. I just want to talk to my actor friends. So I think when you actually do get exposed to options, you quickly see like, oh, I never wanted to be a commercial actor. I just wanted to make the commercial actor money, you know?
Yeah.
And with comedy, it's like, I just want to tell jokes. I mean, it's a high. It's so much fun, you know, getting to do that and getting to talk to people after the shows and stuff. Like that's, you know, I probably said this before, but there was a saying like, you don't pay, you know, like there was a comic or someone, he was getting paid like $20,000. He's like, you're not paying me to perform. You're paying me for the time it takes me to come here and to fly. Like that's the annoying part. The performance is like the bonus.
Well, you talk about the self-produced YouTube stand-up shows that people are doing. And I think, you know, when I brought that up, I'm just like, you know, I see a lot of people doing it and you obviously know it better than I do with it being in that world. So when someone does that, what is the money they make on that? Is just like, is it no different than your YouTube videos? It's just per thousand clicks they're making it, or those shows don't have commercials in them, so they're not making any money on a stand-up YouTube show.
I'm sorry, I don't really understand the question.
Yeah, so when someone self-produces a stand-up show and puts it on their YouTube channel, what money are they making?
Oh, okay.
What money are they making on it?
Oh, not much. I mean, honestly, YouTube doesn't pay. I mean, stand-up doesn't pay that high on YouTube because everything's kind of, you know, vlogging pays very low because of the, like, the vlogging bro culture just doesn't have a high, like, purchasing power, Bachelor pays high because it's a lot of women and women command a higher purchasing power. That's just like the way marketing works. That's why beauty products do well. So a lot of comedians that post their stand-up special might be making $5,000. I would say about $5 for every 1,000 views. Maybe $2 for every 1,000 views if the special doesn't get demonetized. But if you have a special that can go viral in any way and you know get a million new people watching it, you might sell out the Wilbur Theater in Boston, which might pay you over $100,000 that weekend. So it's really about like audience capture more than anything. So that's why it was such a joke when these comedians were getting paid $10,000 to do Comedy Central half hour specials. And then they didn't even have the ownership over their own material. You know, it was just like, unless like Netflix, at least they license your material out. So best case scenario is you can make your own, you know, front the money to shoot a special. Great. $100,000 if you have it, maybe even more. Well, then you can sell it to, you can license it to Netflix if they'll buy it, like Jared Fried did.
Yeah.
And that'll give you this whole new audience. And then in 2 years, when that licensing deal ends up, put it on YouTube. But, you know, there's plenty of amazing comedians like Joe List, one of the funniest comedians out there.
Hilarious.
He just doesn't get picked up by Netflix. He doesn't get picked up by any of them, but YouTube's kind of got a stronger algorithm. So like Netflix, after that first week, you fall out of the top 10, no one finds it. YouTube, your stuff can really have a lot of evergreen, you know, ability to keep on finding audience.
When I brought this up to you about people producing their own Netflix specials on YouTube, he was the guy I was had in mind, was Joe List. I follow him on Instagram, and he's like, hey, my new YouTube show is up. And I'm like, why isn't Joe List getting a Netflix special? And it's just like, well, maybe he will at some point. Maybe, I mean, I guess that's something when you put a YouTube show up, you can go to Netflix and say, look, I did a YouTube, I created my own, I produced my own YouTube 1 hour, 100, an hour and 10 minute stand-up show, and look at how many views it got. So clearly people want to see my stand-up. Is then now that your selling tool to go to Netflix and say like, hey, give me a special, or how does it work? Do you pitch Netflix and Netflix either says yes or no, or they have to come
well,
to you?
Well, I think if you're an industry darling, someone who's just crushing it, like a Taylor Tomlinson,
yeah,
they'll give you the special first. But it's kind of like in most cases, if you want to write a screenplay, no one's going to buy it till you write it. And it's very expensive to shoot your own special. Trust me, So many comedians have shot their own special and it doesn't do well on YouTube and it doesn't get picked up by Netflix. And then you just have a very expensive, demo reel, but like, that's fine too. You know, like that's the idea of giving it away is new. Like Louis CK never did this. And he's like kind of critical of it. He's like, why are people giving stuff away? And it's like, well, because not everybody has that huge mailing list that you have. A lot of people have to rely on like me. I mean, none of my content took off until YouTube found the audience for it. So I'm forever grateful for YouTube's like sort of robust algorithm that it does. It's like, it's Google. It knows if your content's good enough, where to put it. But I don't think Netflix is the be all end all for a lot of people. It's like, you know, great if it's there, but the day where Netflix made you the way like Tom Segura and Joe Rogan were early on Netflix, that's definitely over. And YouTube's kind of like, you just, you know, you know, when you're a comedian, your revenue stream is going to be live shows, YouTube, podcasting. You kind of have like a very widespread revenue stream, which maybe is why I was called a dirty salesman here. But you just quickly see how many comics have shifted their priorities. I mean, people used to beg to get on certain comedy festivals like Just for Laughs. It was the biggest comedy festival in the world. You would get on that and then you would get a development deal and NBC would pay you $100,000 or $400,000 just to hold on to you while they try to get you a pilot. Like they were literally paying comedians to not go to other networks. And then they realized they were just wasting their money. And you know, in the 12 years I've done stand up, the biggest way to like get seen was getting on Just for Laughs. Well, they went bankrupt this year. So I think comedians are finally realizing you don't need anybody to tell a joke, to make people laugh. You don't need the giant theater and be John Mulaney. You can shoot in the dingiest comedy club. If the jokes are funny, people will find it.
And you know, because I'm such a stand-up guy, I see it all over my internet searches. I see it on my TikTok. I see so many clips, and I'm just like, these are all, you know, very well done, and this is how I found this comedian. This is how I found this comedian. I never heard this person before, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing them all the time. I mean, Matt Rife is the biggest example of a social media comedian, because he was doing it for 5-6 years and going nowhere, and then all of a sudden, he became the TikTok comedian that was showing up in everybody's feed. And it's just like, why? Why did his stuff start going viral to get him to where the point he is now, which is, you know, selling out theaters and making millions a year? And it's just like, I guess it was social media. And it just, the perfect formula, I guess, you know, good looking guy, you know, people can debate whether they think he's funny or not, but still, he's the guy that I think I saw the most during right after COVID on my feed. And I had never heard of the guy before, and now look at him.
Yeah, and I mean, there really isn't much of an exception to the rule. If anyone wants to break down him as an overnight success, he's done it over 12 years, and the only reason those comedy clips went viral is because he was going in front of sold-out crowds because he had been working the road so long, because he built a following on Wild and Out. Like, there's always... You know, like, same thing with Andrew Schultz. He didn't come out of nowhere. He built a following on MTV2, and he was, you know, tinkering around for such a long time. So it always seems like, oh, someone popped up out of nowhere. But the reason those comedy clips exist is because he was already making money on the road, you know, being like a Midwestern comedian. And then he was, you know, had the wherewithal to spend a lot of money to film his sets. So, you know, there's always, you know, because look, I mean, so many comedians will tell you, like, one night they're bombing and then the next night they're, you know, opening for someone at Madison Square Garden. And you'd be shocked how many times, like, we were talking about the Get Ready With Me videos. I've got this Get Ready With Me joke that I'm going to be doing. And I've done it. I did it the other night in front of this, like, tired whiskey crowd. And it bombed. And then this guy comes up to me and he's like, dude, I love that joke. And I was like, tell the old people in the crowd. Huh. But, you know, you need to know your crowd. So as Matt Rife and comedians start to attract more of their crowd, that law of attraction just builds their act up stronger and stronger because they're playing to their crowd. Like Jared Fried. He knows his audience is like a lot of women that are like young millennials, like a very specific crowd. So the more you find that crowd, I think the harder the jokes hit. And then it's like, it's just a very slow process, but it's just like a Rubik's Cube. You're slowly kind of weeding out people and figuring it out. Like my YouTube audience, like that for Bachelor, is not necessarily my stand-up audience. A segment of them are, but if people expect like a PG stand-up show, it's like, I'm sorry, we're talking a lot about sex on stage. So it's like, you know, some people there, you know, on YouTube, I try not to swear because it messes up the algorithm. But like on stage, it's like, all right, I'll swear if I want to swear, and if it feels like a crowd that needs to be clean, you'll be clean. Like, you just kind of adjust it to whatever the environment is. But, you know, you will get people that maybe don't get what they thought they were going to get. And that's obviously when that happens on, you know, in stand-up, they either usually don't laugh or they walk out. Sometimes it ends with heckling or whatever, but, you know, it's like, it's not always what you thought it was going to be, because on YouTube and on Instagram, you got to bleep out things left and right. You got to play to this very conservative algorithm, because the advertisers don't want, you know, you to be joking about very, you know, specific things. And then when you get on stage live, it's like, well, we're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about. There's nothing taboo here.
You mean to tell me that your Bachelor audience isn't down with your fucking on memory foam mattress? they're not down with that joke?
Well, and look, I don't even like to say it by age, because I got this lady named Kat. She flies into the shows and she's, you know, probably an elder boomer, or maybe the older generation than that. And she's hilarious. Like, but culturally speaking, The Bachelor consists, and maybe our core audience isn't this way, but YouTube itself has a very conservative audience. And I don't mean that politically. You know, there's a lot of the, like, whenever I do a, you know, make fun of Maddie Pruitt, people think I'm coming after Jesus Christ. You know, they like, they have a hard, you know, because YouTube is like, it's conservative. There's people of all types on it. So when I kind of say something that might be, I don't know, not something they're going to hear at church, they're like, oh, this guy's blasphemy. And it's like, oh, okay. I forget, you know, when you're at a comedy club, you talk about anything you want to talk about. And then on YouTube and other, in certain social media, people are presented with thoughts outside of their bubble for the first time. And YouTube is one of the rare shows that I think I think the audience goes from left all the way to right. It's like all over the place. So that's why you get people like that are influencers that come out of the show that are so afraid to share their points of view on something because they're going to piss off half the crowd. And I think like you and I are probably at the point where it's like, well, then get pissed off because I can't like pretend to be somebody that I'm not.
Yeah, and you can't cater to everybody. It's damn near impossible. We had talked about earlier, you know, your show next Thursday night, March 28th, in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're going to have to, you know, travel out there for it. Well, there's another event taking place in Phoenix, Arizona, coming up in a couple months. And we spent a lot of time on the Clayton and his accuser case last time you were on. I don't think we need to spend as much on it this time around because even though there seems to be something happening and you're still talking about it almost on a daily basis now, why don't you fill people in on almost a Cliff Notes version of where we are at right now with Clayton and his accuser and where the case stands as we speak?
Well, you know what's so funny is someone said this to me. They were like, you know the saying, fuck around and find out? Well, we are in the find out stage of what happens.
Yeah.
We're at, and again, the only people that can take a victory lap is the audience that put pressure, you know, that donated to legal fees, that did all that. They're the people that made this happen. We would have never gotten this far. But you're essentially seeing the legal system not accepting all of Jane Doe's chances to wiggle out of this. And basically what they're arguing now is for who's going to pay the bill. And the way to decide who's going to pay the bill is for the judge to decide who's at fault here. And as it stands right now is zero credible evidence has been provided by Jane Doe. She has been wildly offensive in the way she has weaponized one of the most tragic things that can happen, which is a catastrophic fertility issue. And she's provided no evidence at any step of the way here that she was ever pregnant. In fact, the only evidence she's sharing, as we saw in the, you know, fall under the deposition, is that she lied and committed fraud by changing the letterhead on ultrasounds. So, you know, this audience of primarily women are not happy. They have every right to be shining shining up their pitchforks here. And they just want a consequence for possibly the first time in Jane Doe's life.
And so right now, basically, the lawyers for each team, well, I don't even know if she has a lawyer as we speak. I mean, she's gone through 14 or 15, but
she does not.
She does not. Okay, so
her last lawyer just left her.
Clayton's lawyer is basically in the discovery phase of gathering everything he can because there is a trial date set for June 10th in Maricopa County, which is, as we talked about, I've talked about recently, is, you know, the weekend of my, it's the Monday after my party in Las Vegas on June 7th. So the plan right now, assuming that doesn't get changed and there's no settlement agreement reached and the trial does go through on June 10th, right now the plan is for me to fly from Vegas Sunday night to Maricopa. And I know you will be there as well. And you and I will cover it, which should be a blast. But there is obviously a possibility, something in the next 2 months, where maybe she has a come to Jesus moment and decides, you know what, gosh, I've kept this charade up long enough and I'm getting hammered on every which way and I know I'm wrong. But, you know, you would think that would have happened by now. So maybe she's never going to reach that point. But assuming this happens, you know, we're both going to be out there on June 10th. So June 10th is supposed to be a trial. And that's the trial that's going to determine basically who wins, right? It's going to be a 2-hour minimum trial, and Clayton's lawyers will present their side as to why they don't think what is their side going to be arguing on June 10th?
Well, they're basically arguing for who's going to pay the bill, and so in order for them to prove that this whole case was fraudulent, they're going to show that she never provided any evidence that she was pregnant when she said she was. Mm-hmm. And that's really all they can do. So it was supposed to be a 45-minute trial. They asked the judge to extend it, and the judge said, absolutely. Let's party. And so 2 hours is a long time for this like little family court issue. So if she has a come to Jesus moment, the only way this goes away right now is if Clayton decides to dismiss this. I can't imagine, short of a multi-million dollar settlement, that he's going to want to do that. Because if she does, say, offer him $1 million to settle, that means he's going to have to sign an NDA. He's never going to get to tell his story. And then in a couple of years, she might start to, you know, whisper her side of the story. And it's just, I don't see a price point. And this is why I never settled with her. Her lawyers asked me, like, she sued me, and her lawyers were like, what do you want? I said, what do I want? I want to keep on telling the truth here. You can't afford to pay me anything to shut me up, because it's not about the money. So even if she admits to it tomorrow, it still has to go to trial, I believe. And I think the biggest thing she should be afraid of is that in trial, her video deposition will be played, which will make that public eventually. And people will see her committing fraud. They'll see her admitting to, doctoring ultrasounds. She did admit to that. She also did admit apparently she admitted that there was another guy that accused her of this. And I shared this on my podcast, but some are whispering that maybe she even had a moon bump, a fake baby for victim zero back in 2014. That's a rumor, but that's what some are saying. Hey, this might have been going on this sinister level way back when. And she did not. I mean, she tried to have everything sealed. They denied that. She tried to dismiss it. They denied that. She flew too close to the sun. She absolutely melted her wings. And now she's in the process of crashing into the ocean.
Which is great. This is what we've wanted all along, is just to her to suffer consequences for her actions. Because we've known for a while now, even though you and I, we couldn't prove it, but we're going off. This wasn't just a hunch on our part. We are taking the information that she was giving us, whether it was in a Dropbox or in an email. You know, it just never made sense for 7 months. Things were not adding up. And then I think it pretty much all came to a head in that first hearing, which was just great back in the late October, because I think that might have been the seminal moment of everything, because you were the first person, and Clayton even told this on the podcaster whose name is escaping me right now. But Nick Vial. See, Nick, it's possible to actually promote the podcast. But when Clayton went on Nick's podcast, it was hilarious because he told the story of you were the first person to contact Clayton after that first hearing, to where you were like, hey, man, great job. And he's like, what do you mean? We're like, we watched you. He's like, what? Like, the fact that Clayton and the accuser did not know they were being recorded was absolute genius for the whole case, I think, because that was the first time we had seen her. And, you know, there's the video footage of her moving her stomach up and down because it was clearly not a baby in there. And it was just, she basically, that was the first one we were like, uh-oh, got her. And she didn't even know about it. Because I guarantee, if she knew going into that hearing that people were going to be watching online, there's no way. I mean, well, I guess I can't put anything past her, but I wouldn't think there would have been a way where she would have had that baby bump. I think she just would have shot herself from the neck up, you know?
Yeah. And again, and for my own like legal sort of issues, I have to remind people, when we talk about consequences, we talk about legal consequences. Yeah. We talk about her paying the bill and having to deal with if she commits perjury, which I'm being told she'll never be prosecuted for, no matter how much she lies. So we knew, I mean, we had the hunch day one. The article ran as fiction. He's going to harm my unborn babies. What? Who talks this way? And then that hunch was proven once everyone saw this, all this demonstrable evidence of her committing fraud, still being gaslighted by her and going, well, maybe there is a case. I know you and I and others are going, geez, can you imagine if we're wrong on this? Like, the fear of being wrong. And this is what they talk about with like pathological narcissists, are that they don't just lie. They lie big. Yeah, I got cancer. Who's going to question if I have cancer or not? Cancer, pregnancy. There's certain medical things you wouldn't dare accuse someone of fabricating. Luckily for Clayton, there was enough smoke from previous cases to put it all together. and with the help of the rabid audience, really catch her in some lies. She put a medical company, SMIL, on the letterhead of the or the top of the ultrasound, probably because she was already sort of found guilty of reverse Google searching ultrasound photos. So now she uses a video, and she thinks she's outsmarted everybody. But what she didn't realize is there are people out there that'll go through every single YouTube video of twins ultrasounds and find the same one. So she kind of like outsmarted technology, but she didn't outsmart the biggest sort of thing out there, which is scorned women. And these scorned women put her in her place. And I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to make enemies with a wrath of people this way. I've learned don't make enemies with the opposition's lawyers, because Woodnick Law would probably take this case for free just because of what she's accused him of. So in a world where she used to bank on men not being able to afford to litigate against her, where does that get us now? She doesn't have a lawyer that wants to represent her, and Clayton has a lawyer who's very competently taking her down.
And isn't the imaging of SMIL on that ultrasound, like during the discovery phase, hasn't Clayton's side contacted SMIL and said, hey, is this yours? Did you guys ever put out this video for this woman? And they've been like, who? What?
Oh, no, yeah. Trust me. She admitted to doing that. She had, admitted to using an editing tool to put that on. Okay. And we know that because she put her name as Jane Doe, not Doe Jane, which is like in medical terms, you put your last name first. She also didn't move the timestamp in the video. I mean, she made like 17 mistakes on that one video. She's just not Kate Middleton. So she didn't think the world was going to look through it. And the world didn't, but at least, 1,000 people did, and they were able to figure it out. Now, her claim is that she got that ultrasound from Planned Parenthood, but she went anonymously, so they won't be able to find her. Now, imagine, for medical insurance reasons, imagine a world as litigious as everything is here, where a medical company is going to let you be seen anonymously. Like, it just doesn't happen. You cannot go to Planned Parenthood and not have a paper trail of it. And of course, Clayton's lawyer called that Planned Parenthood to also confirm she didn't get it anonymously. She made the whole thing up.
And the other thing is, during this discovery, and when the judge ruled, like, you have to release your HIPAA records, basically now Clayton's lawyers can go, and all the doctors she's claimed that she saw, an OBGYN, and all these doctor visits she had, haven't three of the four doctors she gave Clayton's lawyers been proven to be, like, when Clayton's lawyers contacted them and said, hey, we've given your medical records by, so-and-so. We're just checking to see, please give us, the records. And they're just like, we have no recollection. We've never worked on this woman before.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like 8 out of 9, and the 9th one just hasn't responded. And I think there was a little bit of a delay because she put the wrong year in the HIPAA release. So they had, they had to like come back and get the right year. Hey, that could have been an honest mistake. Maybe she had baby brain still. But
wait, eight out of nine doctors? She gave them 8 doctors, and all of them have said, we've never worked on this woman?
Well, don't hold me to that, because I'm pulling that number out of my ass. But okay. It is a large number, and the only the only reason, and this is where, like, sure, Clayton probably would have won his injunction against harassment case on her. She had emailed him 500 times from a dozen addresses. Like, she was clearly harassing her, as proven by the judge. But what he needs to admit to, and I'm sure he would, is that thanks to his audience and mine and yours, I think we're the only people that shared that GoFundMe. Thanks to those of us that rallied behind him, he got the legal representation. And that was the only time that Jane Doe was cross-examined, I think, ever. And that put all these things on the record. She probably still thought she was going to get this shit dismissed. So she's like lying out of her ass thinking she's going to get it dismissed. Well, sorry. All of that went on the record. And then they were able to get HIPAA releases for all of that. Big fat lies by her. And to think, this whole time she knew she lost the quote unquote babies back in November, and she was still suing me that whole time. Her lawyers didn't even know she was supposed to be pregnant with me. That's how she's able to sort of fracture. She's able to like divide and conquer. So she was trying to like call the FBI on me. Shout out to Hannah Clark in Virginia, the FBI agent who had to call Scottsdale police. And we got to listen to that conversation. So she tried to weaponize all these different things in all these different directions. And some of her legal representation didn't even know she was allegedly pregnant. So you just get to see how she was getting away with silencing people for so long. But it's like, sorry, you know, like I said from the beginning, guys like you, guys like me, we're cockroaches. We're going to make money, which is going to protect us because it's going to keep us having a monetary reason to talk about this, which is the exact thing that, you know, she's hoping to drain people's wallets. That was her main goal. And, you know, just the threat of suing me cost $10,000+ because she did sue me up until the night before when she dismissed it. So you see her game plan just no longer works because she finally did it in a way that was public enough for people to care.
Yeah, went after the wrong guy. And like I said, assuming this is going to go to June 10th and there is going to be a trial on June 10th, as long as there is, you and I will be there. We'll be covering it in some form or fashion, probably go live on either Instagram or YouTube or something. You'll figure all that stuff out. I'm just there to join the party and it's just kind of a report on it as well, because I think that's, you know, like I said, it's just a quick jump from Vegas and it just, the timing worked out perfect. If my party wasn't that weekend, I probably wouldn't go. I would just be like, it just worked out. And I think it's great. So look for us on June 10th, assuming this trial date stays where it is and it doesn't get pushed back or whatever, which I don't think it will be at this point. But just want to wrap up with this. Last time I talked to you was about in December, a month before you moved. So now you are a Nashville resident. You're all settled in. I'm guessing all the boxes have been unboxed. I just saw this past weekend.
Well, I mean, to ask my wife that. Okay. She's avoiding a whole segment of the house of her stuff.
But oh, really? Just,
oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
we saw on Instagram stories this weekend, your office is now officially done. So how was that undertaking for the last few days?
It's good. I mean, it took a whole lot of paint because I went dark blue and I have this like felt company that makes felt murals. So I placed that on the wall. I think it looks really good. I'm still going to be doing a few more things. Like I got to set up like a nice, I'm going to have a nice like lounge chair. So like when the baby and Tasha want to, you know, come in and join me, they can like sit there and have a second camera set up. So, you know, we're continuing to build things out. It's, it's been great to have space and a driveway. I mean, I know I'm a dirty salesman, but it's like, I'm 38. I finally have a driveway. Give me a minute for a victory lap, please.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, it's all due to, the hard work that you've put in. Now, the last time, we spoke, I believe the due date was May 1st. Has that changed at all? Is it earlier? Is it later? Where are you at?
That's it. That's my birthday. Due on my birthday. Tasha's birthday is May 8th. So if we can kind of get him in between those dates, that would be nice. I mean, not to be judgy, but I don't really want an April baby. And to be quite honest, you know, I was worried. I was like, what if Tasha delivers in March and I'm in Phoenix, but she's holding strong. The baby's, I think, supposed to be around 4.5 pounds. And at this weight, I think he's gaining like 0.5 pound a week or something. Look, I have a full new respect for what women go through. This baby is kicking her like to the point where he's kind of like, you know, it's almost like a baby who's like swimming in a small pool. He's just kicking from one end to the other. So like she'll get a kick on the left hip and then the right rib at the same time. She's like, what the hell are you doing in there?
He's just splashing around in there. You just threw him in the deep end of the pool and he's trying to survive. He's just splashing around with arms and legs going every which way. Like that's,
oh my gosh. Like she's been a trooper, but like it's interesting. And, hopefully, like, I really hope we can make it to your event. I think I'll be there regardless and we'll hire someone, or like Tasha's up, maybe the in-laws will come here, but she clearly wants to be there because we had such a blast last time. And Tasha's like, she's a hard sell, but like you wowed us with the setup. So that was totally great.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, and this year, you know, we got all the independent podcasters that we talk about all the time. I don't think Gabe Moroses can make it, but you know, She's All Batch is coming this year. You, me, Courtney, and Courtney's coming. Might be an appearance by former producer Alana Noel, who is a weekly guest on Courtney's podcast. It looks like both of them are coming. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. The food's going to be better, although I probably can't indulge as much as I would like to now with my new diagnosis. But hey, it can happen. You know, like I said, I've explained my, you know, my type 2 diabetes that it doesn't mean I can't have pizza or I can't have a burger the rest of my life. It just means I really, really have to do a better job of not having it as frequently as I was.
You know, I'm the same way. Like, I haven't had a dessert at home in like 4 months. But like, if I go out and there's a nice dessert at the restaurant, it's like, earn it. If you're going to eat the good calories, make it the good slice of pizza, you know, not like just the Walmart frozen pizza. Like, you know, although I will indulge on a good frozen pie, but yeah, it's, you know, you'll be better for it in the long run for sure.
Yeah. It's been, you know, it's been a little bit, it's only been 10 days, you know, it's definitely a lifestyle change with the amount of shots I have to take a day and, you know, taking extra pills in the morning and stuff like that. A cholesterol pill now that I have to take. And, but doing it and actually it's just an added step to my day. I just can't get up and go have breakfast. I got to, you know, take my blood sugar level and take a shot every morning. You know, it's just it, but it's not, you know, I don't want to say it's inconvenient because it takes 30 seconds. Like if this was taking an extra 25 to 30 minutes every morning before I can get out and do anything, I'd be like, man, this is really just, it's really putting a hamper on my, you know, a damper on my lifestyle, but it's not at all. It's an extra 30 seconds to, you know, prick my finger and get some blood and check my level and then take a shot, you know, but it's definitely something that obviously for the first 48 years of my life, I never had to do. So that's what I mean. It's a lifestyle change and, you know, just obviously eating better and getting back to the gym. So, but yeah, that weekend I plan on indulging, not every single meal, but, certainly, I mean, this week I'm going to Vegas, for March Madness. So this will really be my first time probably having some food that I normally wouldn't, but I'm going to, you know, bring all my stuff and I'll be fine.
And by the way, can you do things like steak? Is that like something that's good,
yeah,
good for you?
Because I wouldn't say it's, they don't want you to have too much red meat, but for me, it's just kind of everything in moderation. Like I'm just not eating a lot and anymore. And I'm just trying to curb my appetite. And when I do have something that maybe isn't great for me, as long as it's in a small portion, but you know, everyone knows how much I love Olive Garden. I mean, Olive Garden is, just the basics of, you know, you get an entree of some sort of pasta. And if I usually got meatballs with my pasta there, but pasta with meatballs and then, you know, super salad and then breadsticks with dipping sauce. I mean, we were looking at probably three times the amount of carbs in one sitting that the doctor wants me to be having. So that's where I have to be careful. I would probably have to get a half bowl of something and, you know, maybe pass on the soup or the salad, you know, it's just stuff like,
you know,
that.
You can also like ask them to box it up before they even bring it out. Like, just give me my second half and I'll eat it in 5 hours. You
yeah.
know?
I'll eat it later. Yeah. I mean, that's basically, now granted, I have not been to Olive Garden since I got out of the hospital. And I haven't really been like, that's been the good thing, I guess. And maybe it's the insulin in my body, or maybe my brain is working as a way of like, you know, that maybe you shouldn't be doing this. I just haven't been like, God, I haven't had Olive Garden in 10 days. I got to have it. I just haven't been craving it. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a mindset or whatever, but I've been doing really well. My blood sugar level is down over 200 points from when I went into the ER that day. I mean, it was bad. I was on the verge of possibly going to the ICU, they said, because I was on the verge of DKA, which was diabetic ketoacidosis. And they were like, you're right there on the fringe. But we definitely want to keep you here, you know, for a couple nights. And yeah, I mean, I was never scared of anything. This isn't a death sentence. It's certainly just a lifestyle change. And, but yeah, type 2 is different than type 1 because type 1 isn't reversible. It's just, you are it the rest of your life and you have to manage it. Type 2 is definitely reversible and manageable. It's just get your weight down, and get to a point where you are no longer dependent on insulin, and that's getting weight down, exercising, eating healthy. And I can definitely do it. It's just a mindset, because for 5 months leading into my hospital visit 10 days ago, I wasn't working out and I was eating crap, you know, and I was eating crap late at night, like late night DoorDash runs at 10:30 at night. It was just awful. Like, I knew I wasn't doing well, and this was almost like the wake-up call I needed, you know? That's what it was.
Crazy. Yeah, well, I'm happy it wasn't anything worse. And, you know, we look forward to seeing you in Vegas. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. So again, man, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. You know, by the time people listen to this, it's possible we might have our new bachelorette. I might be able to spoil who it is, Maria or Daisy, but I will let people know. If not, then I will let people know as soon as I hear it. But thanks again, man, for coming on. Always a good talk. And obviously, we'll be in touch.
Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
You got it. Thanks so much to Dave for coming on. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I could get last minute because this week is so short with me leaving for Las Vegas on Wednesday. And I just wanted to have something in the can we could talk about. Like I said, when I was recording in that podcast, we recorded Monday afternoon. So by the time you're listening to this, either Wednesday or Thursday, I haven't decided which day I'm posting, I might have already been able to spoil who Bachelorette was and maybe have gotten some new news. So everything we said in that podcast might be irrelevant when it comes to Bachelorette talk. So just keep that in mind. But Dave, always a great guest to have on. If you're in the Phoenix area or close to Phoenix, go check out his show next Thursday night, March 28th. The tickets are on sale. You can get them on his website or on his Instagram page. He's got the link to it there. So thanks again to Dave for coming on. Thank you for listening. Please follow me on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review if you can. I'd be really appreciative. But you got to hit play. If you miss an episode, please hit play. That's the only way this thing can get downloads that count. So for Dave Neal, I'm Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in, and I will talk to you tomorrow. See you.